Okay, the talk is really about using the story of Yonah, which I use every year as a kind of mythological journey that illustrates our journey, bringing in the issues of forgiveness, issues of karma, issues of compassion, and I checked with maybe Orna. Yeah, you prefer. Okay. So, just some reminders. Yonah was a prophet, Nevi, in the Jewish tradition, is someone that is, in a way, channeling the beyond, the word of God. But, you know, in the Jewish tradition, the word of God is formalized into the word of God. But in the Kabbalah and so on, the word of God is the word that's coming from the deepest place inside us. So you can play with that. But shall we say he is connected, a prophet is connected and receiving the gift of insight from all, either the deepest place inside him or God above, as you have. And he has a moral authority. He guides people. They trust him, they trust his wisdom, and they trust him to be a channel and not an individual or a person. And he's assumed to have truth. Navi is assumed to tell truth. So Yonah is a Navi, and in the story of Yonah, he has none of these things. He doesn't seem to channel the word of God, because God told him to go to Nineveh, and he went somewhere else. He doesn't seem to have truth, even though his father is called Amittai. He is Ben Amittai, but he doesn't have the truth. And he doesn't seem to have moral authority, because he runs away. He is afraid. It says he is fear, his fear. He doesn't do what he needs to do because of fear. So he doesn't have moral authority either. So he basically blew it, or he lost it. He just lost it. And if you like, karma, his inner voice was telling him, go to Nineveh. And he didn't listen. So he listened to something small in himself, his fear, and not his bigness or his truth. So this is something we all do. Yonah Po is us. We do it constantly. We are not ready for the deepest truth in us. We keep sliding off into what's easy, or what we're afraid of this, or this challenge, or this mission in life. So we go to what's easy. And so he's all of us. And he ran away. And in the book, it's always saying he ran down. It's an interesting use of the word. He ran down. He ran down to Yafo to catch a ship. He ran down into the ship, into the bottom of the ship. He ran down from where he was. Maybe Yerushalayim, I don't know where he was. And he ran down. And down to Tarshiha. Tarshiha is in Spain. Instead of Nineveh, which is the capital of the empire of Ashur. And you can understand why he ran away. Because imagine someone says to you, go to New York, and tell them they're all dafuk there. And because Nineveh was the capital of a huge empire with hundreds of thousands of people in this city. An empire indeed seemed to be very cruel, but still. So, he came to the ship. The ship took him on the way to Tarshiha. There was a really bad storm. And at this point, we have to look at the storm differently. The storm, for me anyway, is the storm of life. It's what is revealed. It's what is revealed. The storm is what takes us. It's not in our hands. It is beyond us. It's what takes us away, what challenges us from a place we don't know. It's the disease that challenges us. It's the loss that challenges us. It's the despair. It's the big challenges that we face that have nothing to do with what we think. Because he wanted to run away. But immediately life came and said, storm. And he, in other words, he was exposed to life here. He exposed himself. Chasuf, he was like exposed to the unknown by taking this step of running from his truth. We can feel how that happens to us. We run away from our truth and we get stuck. Life comes and does things to us. We run away from what feels right in our deepest place, and we find ourselves lost and confused and in storms and in choices, and we can't find ourselves. And he got depressed. He went down into the bottom of the ship in the storm, and it describes how he simply went to sleep. And you can describe it as depression. He wanted to die. He went to sleep and wanted to die. So this is depression. And all his vulnerability was exposed there in the ship. The sailors are really in the ship, ordinary people. They're a really okay people. They really want to help him. They had compassion on him. They couldn't understand why he went to sleep either, that he didn't help them. They were sort of innocent, ordinary people that were trying to understand. They didn't want, he said, throw me overboard. They tried everything not to do that. They had honest compassion. And in the end, he managed to convince them, and they really felt if they didn't do something, the ship would go down. And they threw him over the side of the ship. In other words, what he is saying to them is, ordinary life is not possible anymore. I cannot anymore. I have to die. There is no further place here for me. This depression, which is our depression also, is saying, I can't anymore. It's non-existence. It's what the Buddha called wanting to be towards non-existence rather than existence, towards not being rather than being. So it's a natural place. He was towards not being. And he said, I want to die, throw me overboard. He was thrown overboard, and in his desperation, the end of the road for him, and he got swallowed by the whale, Leviathan. And I should say that here is the great expert on Leviathan, Hadar. So anything I say is like this compared to what Hadar knows about Leviathan. And also my wife, she's studying Leviathan for deeply in the Kabbalah. But let's say Leviathan is the deep power beyond thought, underneath, it's the deep power of life. It's the deep power beyond us. It's the deep power that we can't control. It is in the Jewish mythology, it's the same as Naga, which is the serpent in Hindu mythology, or the Vedas. The Naga of is also a sea creature, huge, but wise. And it's the same, pachot yoter, as the snake, the Nachash. It's the power underneath things that we have no access to. It's like, it's not only the animal mind, it's the big mind. That we, with our human mind, we gain power from it, but we can't really see it. Because we're too into the form of being a human being. So Leviathan is this huge power in consciousness that we mostly run away from. Jonah got swallowed because of his desperation. He just dropped into the whale. The whale swallowed him up. And what happened there, it's also the whale is the bottom. You can't get more bottom than that. Down, 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 down to the bottom of the sea and be swallowed by the whale. The whale is the darkness. The whale is the death. The whale is giving up everything that's human. And his song that he sang in the bottom of the whale, or the belly of the whale, which is like the death, the place of death, the song which he sang, or the poem which, or the prayer, is really about this. It's about dying. It's about going to the end. It's about the elements, the earth and the water, and things that are really not in the human dimension. He talks about being locked in by the bars, the soragim of the elements. So it was elemental experience and very shamanistic. It's one of the most shamanistic experiences in the Bible, where he went through the death experience, or the death place, he died to his self, to his early self. And it really reminds me of so many stories and places. I mean, there's so many examples where we need to really die in order to come back and live. That it's not enough to try and solve our problems. We can't just simply solve our problems, as Einstein says, with the same mind that creates them. We have to go to another place to solve our problems. And dying is a place where the problems get solved. We go beyond our ordinary thinking, our ordinary desires, our ordinary comforts, our ordinary mind. So it's a dying in order to live. I mean, there's a small example which comes to mind right now of Eckhart Tolle, who some of you may have read his book, The Power of Now. But in The Power of Now, he describes how he went down into the deepest, deepest depression. For years he was in depression. And at a certain moment he was in England and at a university. And at a certain moment he said, I am going to die now. I have to suicide. And he was just about to jump out of the window to kill himself. And at that moment he was in the deepest, deepest, the bottom, bottom place. And at that moment there was a voice in him that said, yes, but there is a voice that knows that you're in that place of depression and despair. And that voice is not depression and despair. So, and suddenly he fainted, he went unconscious, and he woke up in bliss. Total transformation. And he became a spiritual teacher, more or less just like that. So it's kind of, he was really locked in the bottom of the whale, the bottom of the sea, kind of ground zero. He was in at ground zero, can't get any lower. And at that point, truth arrived. Truth of his elemental nature, that he's made of elements. Truth that is not his, it's not him anymore. It's not about Yonah anymore. It's not about Nineveh or Tarshiha either. It's about the elements, about something much deeper than being a human being. And he found this truth, and it was basically the end of his fear. There was no need anymore for fear, no need for depression, because in a way he fell down through the normal human mind into a place which is beyond the normal, ordinary thinking mind of who we are, what we want, what we feel our mission is, what we need to do, or what we need to be. It was out of there. And the whale vomited him up onto the shores of the sea, and it was like he came out of the journey, of the shamanistic journey, came out of death into a place where he knew he could carry on with his mission, with his karma, if you like, with God's voice. He was able to listen to God's voice, but only after he lost himself completely in the whale. Then God could talk to him properly. And then it didn't matter anymore. In a way, he'd been to a place where there was nothing. So it didn't matter anymore to go to Nineveh. I can understand it. In Nineveh, he was nobody. He wasn't any more a frightened person. Why not go to Nineveh? Never mind it's a big capital city. What will be, will be. And many of you are asking this question in this weekend, and really asking the question from the same place. So what do I do? What is the right thing to do here? What is the right thing to do here? How can I decide what is right? And I think the lesson of Yonah is you can't really decide what is right. There isn't a package called what is right. But there is acting from a place after we go through the journey of being swallowed by the whale, which in certain way we do every time we sit in meditation here. We go into a place which is not really totally us. It's the breath and the body and the elements and the heat and the struggle and so on, but it's the place where we're touching somewhere that is not the ordinary mind, not the regular mind that says, I need this, now I've got to go to the shop, now I have to look after the kids, now I have to go to the university. It's not that. It's a place where we are really dropping into the whale as much as we can. But Yana did it in 3 days, may take us a bit longer. But it's the same place. And the whale vomited him up. And in another dimension, in a certain way, by the way, the whale is us. When we are swallowed by the whale, it is us being swallowed. It is something, we are being swallowed by ourselves. It is in us. It's not that we need, the whale is the image of that place in us that is not full of plans and so on. Like John Lennon said, life really happens when we have other plans. It's life really happening. So it's, the whale is really in him. Just to make that clear. But he died into that place of, in a way, nothingness or emptiness or the elements or the power of life which is not in ours to control. Well, he goes to Nineveh and he manages to change the whole city. Something happened there, and maybe it was because of that meeting of the whale that he really, like after the night of the Buddha's awakening, when the Buddha said, my teaching is the roar of a lion. It's not the squeak of a mouse. It's the roar of a lion. When you've been to that place, the moral authority is a roar of a lion. You are talking from another place. And that's power. And so he, in a way, had that power. It doesn't say that's my, you know, it's my interpretation, but I can see how when we come to a place of nothingness, of emptiness, of the power of the whale, then we can, with the roar of the lion comes out of us, there's a new power, which is not framed into the doubt and the fears and the ordinary concepts of what it means to litmoded, to cope. It comes from another place. The Buddha said the teaching is the roar of a lion. So he went to Nineveh, and the whole city changed. They fasted, they transformed, and Yonah went up to a hill near the city and watched what would happen. And he wasn't happy. He wasn't happy. He said, again, I want to die. And God, the deepest voice in him, said, what's the matter with you? And he said, I came all this way, and look, the city is saved. And I thought that you'd come and destroy them. They've done terrible things, the Assyrians. They were indeed a pretty, you know, aggressive bunch. And they did terrible things throughout the very cruel empire. And Yonah said, they're not being punished? I came there and I expected them to be punished for what they did. There's law of karma. They should be punished. And God basically said to him, you need to learn about forgiveness. The sailors forgave Yonah. The people, God forgave Yonah. The God himself forgave Yonah from running away to Nineveh. God forgave running away to Tarshish. God forgave Nineveh. It tells us a little bit about where forgiveness comes from. Forgiveness is a big thing. And Iran, I think, expressed this yesterday, that real forgiveness is not about saying, I forgive you, let it go. Forgiveness in the Book of Yonah, and for us we can think about it a little bit, it comes from God, not from a man. Meaning, it's we ourselves, from an ordinary mind, not easy to wipe out the past. It's not in our hands to wipe it. Actions come from beyond us. And the healing of actions come from beyond us. So they come from a deep place. God is forgiving. In other words, the deepest place in us is needed to repair the past or the actions we take. It needs the deepest place in us. But it does happen. Clearly it happens. Nineveh was totally saved. A city of Assyrians, cruel for maybe 100 years, were saved. They were not punished in any way. And it shows that things can start again. But it has to be from the deepest place. The forgiveness comes from somewhere which is the God in us, the voice in us that is totally released or big. Not a small voice, I'm sorry I hurt you. It's more like wiping the past. That's not easy. It's possible, but it's not easy. And there's many stories about this in the Buddhist tradition, of course, like Angulimala, that some of you may know. which give you the same message, that Angulimala was a robber in the forest, and he needed to kill 1,000 people, and he had their finger. He killed 999, and then the Buddha came into the forest. Although all the monks said, "Don't go because he'll kill you," and he did. The Buddha said, "No, I'm going alone." And the guy was waiting for the 1,000th person. And the story is that the Buddha, it was his, the robber's own mother that was going to go in the forest to try and stop him. And the Buddha said, "Don't go, he'll kill you. I will go instead." And he went into the forest, and Angulimala said to him, "Stop." And he didn't stop. He carried on walking. And the Angulimala said to the Buddha, "Stop." And he carried on walking. And the Angulimala said, "Stop." And he carried on walking. And he couldn't catch the Buddha. The Buddha was just walking, but he couldn't catch him. And the Buddha turned around to him and said, "You stop. I stopped a long time ago." Which is a beautiful thing to say. "You stop." And he did, and he said, "I don't understand. People either run away and I kill them, or they fight me and I kill them, or they beg for mercy and I kill them. But you didn't do that. Who are you?" And he said, "I'm the Buddha, and I'm coming to tell you to stop. Stop killing, stop doing harm, and stop suffering." And he listened to the Buddha, and he became an arhant. And it was totally like, change. He became an arhant, although he killed 1,000 people. The change was deep and total. Forgiveness happened, but it only at the deepest place, where the past was, in a way, wiped out. He learned it, Yona, because he sat on the hill, and there was a plant, Kayon, that grew there and gave him shade. And then what happened is a worm came and destroyed the plant. And he had no shade. He was sitting in the blazing sun. And for the third time he said, "I want to die." Third time in the book. And God said, "Look." Again, the deepest, the voice of wisdom, if you like. Said, "Look, you are crying because of the one worm that you didn't make this plant, and you didn't make the worm, and you think you're in control. And who do you think you are? That you want 100,000 people to be suffer, and animals in the city of Nineveh because of you? Because you went on this journey and you think they deserve it? Who are you to say anything? Fate doesn't come because of us. Karma is not something that we can control." And that's the message, a very important message from in this story, that we can't design karma, we can't design our life, we try so hard to construct our life right. We can't design it. Life is bigger than us, life is uncontrollable by us, karma is huge. We don't have any control over karma. It's too big. And yet, Yona, by going through his journey, did change something. He did find his mission. He did do something important. So the situation isn't so clear. It's not that we are helpless. And karma is a big fate that we just have to give up and let it take us. It's not that. We can change our mission in life. We can fulfill our deepest mission like he did. We can work. We can receive forgiveness. We can change something. We, according to our wisdom, if we have access to that deep place, if we ourselves go through the whale, we will know what to do with our life. and yet life is uncontrollable. This paradox between the two, that yes, we will know what to do in our life, but life is uncontrollable, this paradox is a very interesting place to look at. And from the Dharma says a lot about this. And every time the Buddha was asked, is there Goral? That is determinism. Is it all Katuv Lamala, written in the book? Every time, see, everyone says Gemar Chatima Tova, and I think of it, you know, who's the Pakid up there that's going Lachdom Chatima? It isn't like that. It's not written down. Otherwise, Angulimala wouldn't be an arhant. Yonah wouldn't have gone and found and saved Nineveh. The people of Nineveh wouldn't have been saved. Obviously, there is change, that we can change things. But it's also not the other side, which is everything is in our hands to construct our life, and everything is chaos and unconstructed. And so between the two, of karma as constructed and life as unconstructed, in which we do it all, which is a big responsibility, between the two there is a big space in this paradox. And the big space is filled by the dynamic understanding of cause and effect in the moment, the toharega. Just what I said yesterday, this poem, sow a thought, we reap lizroa machshava, kotsrim mila, zorim mila, kotsrim pula, zorea pula, kotsrim hergel, zorea hergel, kotsrim ishiyut, zorea ishiyut, kotsrim et hagora. I say, well, yes, we build, there is a dynamic in which we are constructing ourselves all the time. And yet, karma and fate is there, big story, we can't control it. So it's this dynamic which needs our wisdom. So we go out in the morning as pure, as wise as we can be, and we might get knocked down by a bus. To be as pure and as wise as we can be is not a guarantee that that moment we won't be knocked down by a bus or anything else. It's this dynamic where we live in this middle way, the Buddha called it the middle way, where it's not constructed and it's not chaos or unconstructed. There is a dynamic which is us, which we play with, which is our life. And a lot of that is about not being a self. Because it's only the self that wants to design life. The whale, the Leviathan, doesn't want to design life. The Leviathan is life. We get swallowed by the Leviathan, get swallowed by anatta, non-self. Not me. I and what I want and what I'm afraid of. Like the Yonah. The problem with Yonah was his self, the me that was afraid. And he went into a place, he got swallowed by a place which is beyond me, the non-me, the anatta, the non-self. And it's happening all the time. I mean, there's a story of the Japanese story of a samurai who came to the teacher and said, teach me about heaven and hell, means fate, heaven and hell. And the samurai said to him, you're an idiot if you ask a question like that. He said, what? You talk to me like that? I'm going to kill you. And he started to take his sword out. And the teacher said, that's hell. He said, oh. And he put his sword back. And the teacher said, that's heaven. It's happening in the moment. That this way that we construct our life is in the moment. It's not in the picture, the big picture of Goral, of heaven and hell. The place where karma is constructed for us is in intention. Intention, hitkavnuyot, or kivun, is the place where we meet karma. As much as our intention is right, our meeting with karma will be helpful. Still, guarantee. Still, we may get knocked down by a bus. No guarantee anywhere, because karma is so big that we cannot control it. But the place where we move something, we shift something, is in the understanding of intention, where our intention is. And there's a very famous example of this. Like a man stabbing someone with a knife is doing harm and will cause more harm. Karma will create conditions for more harm. But if the knife is that of a surgeon, menateach, that is cutting the body in order to heal it, the same action of cutting the body is taken from a different intention. So it's an example how it's in the intention that's important. Yona tells us this. His intention was to run away. He had an intention to, based on fear. It didn't work out good. The storm came because of his intention. His intention wasn't pure. It wasn't the deepest place in him. As much as we are aware and awake and connecting with the Leviathan inside us, the big place beyond us, beyond the self, that much our intention begins to change and begins to purify and begins to be more right and more fitting. How many people, and we see it in our own life, in our own Sangha, so many people in the Sangha, in the Tovana Sangha, for example, have said, look, I can't do this anymore. For example, standard work for obsession about money, for example. At a certain point, they say, I just can't do this anymore. I'm giving up and I'm going to be a therapist. I want to help people. I want to help people in a hospice. I want to help people who are suffering. So many people have felt very honest, deep need to express another intention, different intention. And from there, action happens. And so, we can see the way from a place of, if you like, the Leviathan in us, the deepest place of power of life and awareness beyond the self, that forms a new intention. That helps us go to Nineveh and not to Tarshiha. That helps us say, the right thing for me is this. We don't know that before, because everything we do in life is constructed because we listen to our parents, we listen to the school, we listen to others, we're conditioned in the conditioning, the hatnaya. So my parents all the time said, be a doctor, be a doctor, you have to be a doctor. And like Jewish kids from the Parbarim in England. But your mission will be clear when you have the wisdom to see more deeply. And it can be anything. It can be anything. Your mission can still stay in and be a soldier. If you're a soldier, it doesn't mean to say everyone that meditates has to run to the hospice to help dying people. It's not that. It's your own journey. And your own journey could be, for example, to be a soldier, because you're a soldier. And that's what you're doing. But you'd be a different soldier. if you like, soldier, Shambhala, Lochem Shambhala, that he's doing things differently. And that can be your intention. The intention is where we meet karma. It's our meeting place between a being that is acting in the world, this being that acts in the world, because we don't stop acting for one moment. We, as long as we're alive, we are doing, saying, thinking, so we are acting. This being that is acting, meeting the unknown of karma, of the wheels turning of the world. What's the meeting point that's healthy? It's the deepest intention that we can find. That's the meeting point. And from there, hopefully, our karma will be better. No guarantees, but it, as we sow, you know, Zoreas Makshava, as we sow Makshavot Acherot, it's probable that we will reap something better. It's up to us, but we don't know. We can never know. But we're in a different territory. We've gone to Nineveh. We've gone to do something that's important. We've gone to do something good. We're in another territory because we intend Hitkavnut is there and not there. But we needed the wisdom to go there and not there. We wouldn't do it otherwise. Otherwise we're an automat listening to the voice of our parents, our school, our whatever it is that the voice is. So I want to finish with something which is very subtle, not really clear to understand, but it's the place of the whale, really. And what does things look like from the place of the Leviathan? How does Leviathan see life? In other words, and their place there, Leviathan is non-self. It's the place where we die to ourselves. We die to the ordinary self. What do things look like from the non-self in terms of fate, action, and reaction? And one of the teachers that I like to read, and many of us do, is Nisargadatta Maharaj, who's a non-dual Indian teacher. And someone says causation, cause and effect, sibatiyut, which is the way the ordinary mind looks at life, as cause this, ze biglal ze ze, biglal ze ze. That's the ordinary mind, it's not the mind of the Leviathan. So someone says, I feel as the ordinary mind looking at life, then the law of causation, ha-chok sibatiyut, is working. Because the mind sees, because biglal ze ze, biglal ze ze. So we see it like Aristo. And Nisargadatta Maharaj says, it's true, as long as the mind operates, causation seems to be happening. But, like everything at the level of mind, the law of causation contradicts itself. No thing in existence has a specific cause. The entire universe is contributing to the existence of even the smallest thing. Nothing could be as it is without the universe being what it is. When the source and the ground of everything is the only cause of everything, then one cannot speak of a law of causality. The universe is not controlled by its content. That needs contemplation. That's a little one-liner that needs some meditation. The universe is not controlled. Ha-yikum lo nishlat al yidei ha-tochen shelo. Because the potential is infinite. And it's an expression of something fundamentally and totally free. The last word is of a movement of the heart. That when faced, if you like, the heart of the Leviathan is the heart of compassion. Because there, when we're faced with the unknown, the bigness of things, the universe itself, the way that from a deeper place we see things, we see things without the causation, the big picture, and then we get sad and hurt because of the suffering. And the suffering is partly because of not seeing the picture. And it hurts us when we look around and we see how people do not see, and people do not go into the belly of the whale, and they do not, they are frightened, and they run away from their truth. And they run to Nineveh, and everyone's, the whole society is doing that, and everyone's doing that, and it hurts us. And that's the voice of compassion. And Yonah, at the end of the story, God tried to show it to him. The last words of the story are animals, about animals. A bit like the story of Eeyore. The last words of the story of Eeyore, also about animals, not about humans. And the God said, you know, the Kikayon died and you struggle. What about this city of 100,000 people? You want to kill all of them. And what about the animals? Where is your compassion? Where is your heart? You want to kill them. You're really interested that they suffer. And see how you suffer just from one little worm that wasn't yours. And you didn't make this Kikayon and you didn't destroy it. And you want to be in control and... So where's your compassion? That's basically... And the end of the book, there is silence. And it's very interesting that there is nothing he says after that. We don't know whether he got the message or he didn't get the message. My feeling is, and this is really a sort of message for all of us here, my feeling is he's in a learning process. And the whole book is a learning process. And it's not that he got it or he didn't get it. It was that this for him was a learning process and he shut up. And the last word, as I say, of the book is animals. Cows and sheep in Nineveh, why should they suffer? And he shut up at that point. So let us shut up now for a moment, or let me shut up for a moment. And we'll take a couple of minutes of silence.